Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Back in on the drive, coming up in 30 minutes, we'll give you another chance to win a prize. So if you just missed your chance to win the $25 gift card to Twin Peaks, we'll give you another chance coming up in about 30 minutes as we continue our, well, I don't know if this is a tradition, a new tradition, but we play a game called There's More History Than Recent History, where we test Brad Fanning's knowledge of baseball. You lost last week to Josh Vernon.
We'll see you today.
You can beat Bob Fesco in the game. You'll compete against him coming up in just a little bit. We'll also get back into the Royals with Ian Kennedy. Plus, Kyle Zimmer actually spoke with the media today. We'll hear from Kyle Zimmer coming up in just a little bit. Today's pop quiz was presented by Victory Chrysler Dodge Jeep Ram. Today's pop quiz was the Americans. I'm not going to lie to you guys. I don't know why today's pop quiz was what it was. Brandon's on the phone. I would ask him, but he is not available. So if you missed it earlier today, Adam Schefter was the one that broke the story. Joe Flacco has been traded to the Denver Broncos.
This is a situation where the Denver Broncos were looking to try to upgrade the quarterback position. And so Denver and was able to reach an agreement in principle with the Baltimore Ravens. Now, their intent is to trade him to Denver. That is the expectation. They cannot process that. The teams are not allowed to discuss compensation. They're not allowed to agree on compensation. But when the trade goes down in March, I think it'll be somewhere around a mid-round draft pick that goes in return for Joe Flacco.
So now we know what it was. Joe Flacco was traded to the Denver Broncos for a 2019 fourth-round pick. I feel like people are a little bit premature on the trade for Joe Flacco for the Denver Broncos. Let's just see what the next steps are. Like, I think sometimes in our culture, we want to instantly decide who wins trades and who loses the trades, and I get it. I'm part of that same culture, too. But this is something I just got to see what the next moves are. Step one was acquiring a quarterback you think is better than Case Keenum, at least for this season. Step two has to be getting Case Keenum off the roster. I do not think the Broncos can have Case Keenum on the team next year just based on the cap hit that they would take for essentially having their backup quarterback make a lot of money next year. And then they have the 10th overall pick, and they really like Drew Lock. Are they going to take a quarterback and start to prepare themselves for the future and beyond? Or are they going to do a Broncos-like thing, not take a quarterback, take a pass rush or take another position, and then go another season without having their quarterback of the future on the roster? Let's just see how the Broncos play it over the next 2 months before I think we ultimately judge this trade for Denver.
You got to admit, it's a little bit of a head-scratcher today. You didn't see this one coming, right? The Broncos trading for Joe Flacco?
I didn't think that the Broncos were going to make that move, but I am not surprised that the Broncos are not having Case Keenum be their starter. I actually thought maybe they were going to be involved with Nick Foles from the Eagles.
Yeah.
So I am not surprised that Case Keenum is not the starting quarterback for the Broncos. I am surprised a little bit that it's Joe Flacco.
Yeah, I just don't know if the Broncos didn't have to do it. You know, I mean, they've got Case Keenum for, what, $10 million this year, and then they just added, what, $18.5 million to Joe Flacco's salary. You know, that's part of it, too. So I'm curious, and I think it's fair to question the Broncos and John Elway based on what John Elway's done with quarterbacks. Like, he's missed big time. He missed with Paxton Lynch. He brought Mark Sanchez in. He had Trevor Siemian. He's brought Brock Osweiler back. His judgment when it comes to bringing quarterbacks in for the Denver Broncos is questionable. And so you're probably right, Cedar. I mean, the step two, step three in this thing is when we'll find out exactly what the Broncos are trying to do. I just don't quite understand it right now.
I want to play for you guys what Adam Schefter had to say about Case Keenum. Case Keenum, if he's still on the roster for the Broncos, that will be the worst case scenario because they owe Case Keenum a lot of money.
I think his future now is up in the air. I think that's the best way of saying it. We don't know whether the Broncos will keep him, rework his contract, try to trade him. I think a lot will depend on who has interest, if anybody else is interested, what they decide to do, how much money they need to save. Again, I think there are no answers right now as to Case Keenum's future. The one thing that we can say is that it's up in the air, it's uncertain, and I don't think the Broncos know at this point in time what they'll wind up doing with Case Keenum, but Joe Flacco is the new expected starting quarterback for the Denver Broncos.
If I had to guess, I think Case Keenum gets traded for a future pick. I do not think the Broncos get a 2020 pick for him. I think they're going to have to take bare bones for Case Keenum because the rest of the NFL knows you got to get him off the roster. I think they eventually trade him for a 2020 fifth round pick, but I do not think Case Keenum will be on the roster week one for the Denver Broncos.
Would you rather have Case Keenum or Joe Flacco tutoring, say they draft Drew Lock. Would you rather have Joe Flacco showing him the ropes for 1 year than a guy like Case Keenum?
Yeah, I mean, I'd rather have Flacco. I mean, it comes down to how open Flacco is to coaching Drew Lock in this scenario. I don't know without talking to him or not. I mean, Lamar Jackson, to me, it makes a little bit sense of you think you're the franchise quarterback for the Ravens. They invest in you. Then they draft a first-round quarterback. So I see how that situation would be different than Denver. If you're Flacco and then you see, you got to kind of see the writing on the wall a little bit of,
yeah.
Hey, I still want to play in the NFL. This is my role here. Am I going to accept the role that we have? Let's just see how Flacco wants to play it.
Yeah, and I think the Broncos have to know before they even make that deal if Flacco's into that, right? I mean, you can't just bring in a guy and say, hey, here's what we want you to do, and then have him just be okay with it. Because not everybody's Alex Smith. Not everybody.
He still has Elway there. So, if that's where Drew Lock goes, that's not the worst situation of the world to have one of the 10 greatest quarterbacks of all time as the guy that handpicks you and as your general manager to bounce ideas off.
How's that worked out for the guys that Elway's drafted and the guys he's brought in? I mean, it hasn't. I mean, they've been awful at quarterback with the exception of them of Elway being able to bring in Peyton Manning.
I personally think Drew Lock has more talent than all of them, too.
Well, I wouldn't disagree with you on that. I'm just saying Elway's track record ain't good when it comes to quarterbacks.
I want to play for you guys. This is from 104.3 The Fan in Denver. This is what they have to say about Joe Flacco being traded to the Broncos.
Broncos need is a presence at quarterback that can influence and certainly produce positivity and more confidence. So I think this is more about that than any stats that anybody wants to look at Flacco and try to compare him to Case Keenum and say, okay, wait a minute, it's really an upgrade? It's not really an upgrade. He stinks. His play has gone down. It's decreased. I think his presence makes up for that, especially when it's really needed here in Denver, Colorado.
I understand why Denver would want somebody like Flacco. From what he's accomplished in the NFL, if there's anything left in that arm, I appreciate it. I could see the Broncos, or at least the team, in a situation like the Broncos, you don't have the quarterback of the future on your roster. You're stuck a little bit. You still want to be competitive. You still think this defense has a chance. You still like a little bit of the pieces. So you're going out there, and you're kind of evaluating the market a little bit. Maybe you like Nick Foles, but Philadelphia's asking for a second-round draft pick. You don't like Blake Bortles, but your plan in the back of your mind is to still draft a quarterback. I do think that the Chiefs have shown the NFL a little bit of a blueprint. Think about what every team did this past offseason or this past year in the NFL, aside from the Jets. Arizona was trying to do what the Chiefs did with Patrick Mahomes. Cleveland was trying to do the exact same thing. I think that we're going to see a couple of these teams, especially with these quarterbacks, they're going to try to do the exact same thing because that works. We always talk about copycat league. Wouldn't you try to copy what the Chiefs did? Get you an established veteran quarterback and try to sit and sit and sit that rookie quarterback and put as little pressure on him as possible. A lot of teams are going to try to copy. Now, I agree with you. There's only one Patrick Mahomes. There's only one Andy Reid. But we see all the time that does not stop NFL teams from trying to do what they think the it thing is.
Which to me is mind-boggling to me. Because how many times have we seen, ooh, the Patriot way? We're going to take the Patriot way to Kansas City. We're going to bring in Scott Pioli. We're going to bring in Matt Castle. We're going to have Charlie Weiss. We're going to have the Patriot way. It doesn't work unless you have the right people. You know, so you could try and the Steelers were going to try to do what the Chiefs did, right? You know, I mean, they drafted a quarterback, and Ben Roethlisberger's like, yeah, it's not my job to help you. It's not. So you've got to have the right guy in place. You got to have the right coach in place. And you got to be able to sell to the veteran quarterback to be able to do it. Not everybody's going to be as open to teaching the guy that's taking you the job as Alex Smith was. So you can say that's the blueprint, but if you try to plug in a blueprint with every single team based on what the Chiefs did, it doesn't work. I mean, I remember.
But Brad, though, we can agree situation is Aaron Rodgers turned out to be perfectly fine, and we all know the relationship between them is Favre was not Alex Smith.
Yeah, but that was like how many years was that? That was how many years did he sit? Three?
I agree, but I'm saying is sometimes I think we underestimate that some people are just going to make it regardless of their talent, that maybe Alex Smith did everything he can to help Patrick Mahomes. You're telling me that Mahomes wouldn't be able to do some of the things with his arm angles and strength, all that? Like, Alex Smith, like, there are some things that Alex Smith could not teach Patrick Mahomes, and some of those things he just has. So if you're Elway and you think the Lock is going to be the guy, then draft the quarterback and then hope that you've put enough of the coaching structure around him for it to work.
Fair enough, and I get you on that. But, yeah, Mahomes has got the arm strength and the talent to be able to do those things, but he didn't have the understanding of the offense, and that's where Alex Smith came in. I mean, if you hear all the conversation with Mahomes and the things that he was talking about that Alex taught him and that Alex showed him, and then you've got Andy Reid there too. I mean, do the Broncos have that? Is Vic Fangio Or the offensive coordinator going to be able to sit there and navigate that relationship with a new guy that he just brought in Joe Flacco and a quarterback that you just drafted? Andy Reid's been in place in Kansas City for, what, 4 or 5 years before Mahomes got here? And he'd been with Alex Smith. I mean, the foundation in Kansas City was great. And so I just think when you try to plug a blueprint into every other team because one other team did it, it's dumb. It doesn't work everywhere. I remember earlier in the season when the Chiefs were running this great offense and everything was – they were keeping everybody off balance. They had the – you know, the hot potato passes, they had the misdirection and all this other stuff. My cousin texted me, he goes, man, everybody's probably trying to do what is going to try to copy what Andy Reid's doing. I'm like, well, here's the deal. Andy Reid's got Mahomes and Tyreek Hill and Andy Reid. Not every team has that. You can't copy that if you don't have the right guys in place to be able to do it. It sounds good, but Vic Fangio and Joe Flacco and drafting Drew Locke is not the same as having Andy Reid and Alex Smith there.
I agree, but you can agree that there are more ways to develop your quarterback than where the Chiefs did it.
We're talking about the blueprint
Because Russell Wilson did not have an Alex Smith. Russell Wilson had Matt Flynn, and he had Pete Carroll. He developed into a good NFL quarterback. Andrew Luck did not have an Alex Smith behind him. He got thrown into the fire. I'm more talking about the blueprint of, let's try to give our quarterback who maybe is not ready. Because I do think what stunts the growth of some of these quarterbacks is, we put you in week two in your rookie season and you're just not prepared to go out there and play.
Absolutely.
Now, some of it necessarily isn't just the, hey, let's have the veteran quarterback to show you the ropes. Some of it is, let's just have you see the game from a distance. Let's have you absorb as much of the offense that you can just start on second base. Where Mahomes maybe started on third base because you had Alex Smith, you had Andy Reid, and you had the ability to sit for a year with no pressure on you. I'm with you. The Chiefs had the ideal situation at quarterback. No team can replicate what they did. But the Broncos, I think, are going to try to do something very similar. Let's put a good defense around them with Vic Fangio. Let's see if we can do that. Let's put a veteran quarterback here in Flacco who has played big, similar skill set, we would agree, to what Drew Locke is, just in terms of how they play. Way more similar than what Joe Flacco was for Lamar Jackson in the NFL. And then let's see if that can work for us. I don't think it's a bad strategy.
Well, yeah, if it works. You know, you talk about Cleveland, though, in the blueprint. Hell, they fired a coach. You know, and you had Tyrod Taylor, and it was a mess. And Baker Mayfield, they threw him in the deep end, and he had to learn. And then by the time they fired the coach, then he was better with the right coach that he had. I just think if the blueprint conversation always drives me nuts because it just doesn't work for everybody. It's got to be the right situation. And it doesn't feel like, at least in my opinion, that it's the right situation in Denver for that because John Elway has had issues with quarterbacks. Like, he can't seem to get it right at the quarterback position. What head coach is he on right now? Fourth, fifth, something like that in Denver right now. And you got a defensive guy that's the head coach. And I've always said, it doesn't have to be the head coach that works for your quarterback, but you got to have a guy. And so do they have that guy? I mean, it's all going to be new. They're all throwing these new parts in, and they're going to try to plug in a blueprint that happened in Kansas City with established veteran guys and one of the greatest offensive minds in the game.
Text line 69306. We'll take more of your opinion on this with the Broncos trading for Joe Flacco. Coming up in a little bit, we'll play a baseball game and give you a chance to win a prize. But first, Ian Kennedy is an example of sometimes you get exactly what you pay for. We'll talk about that coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, Carrington here, Kylie here, Fanning here, taking you up until 6 o'clock. Coming up in just a little bit, Bob Fesco is going to join us in studio for our famous baseball game. There's more history than recent history. We'll play that in just a little bit. We got this text on the text line. Text line 69306. The Flacco trade is stupid for Denver. Say it out loud. Can Flacco put up enough points to hang with Mahomes or Rivers? If not, it's a waste of draft capital and money. Maybe this is just like a difference in philosophy of, you know, like, that's what makes sports fun, that we all just see things differently. They traded a fourth-round pick. They traded a pick that was extra. So they still have a fourth-round pick. This is one of the trades they got back for Demaryius Thomas. I don't really think it's a waste of draft capital at all. Now, if they had traded a second-round draft pick for Joe Flacco, a significant one, this is a non-top 100 pick for Joe Flacco. That seems about what he's worth in the NFL. And then we talk about money. Joe Flacco now makes about the money that he should make. Now, at the time when he signed the contract, it was an awful deal for him. I mean, Joe Flacco makes less money than Alex Smith makes this season. He makes around the same money.
Middle of the pack now, probably at $18.5 million.
Yeah, I mean, he makes around the same money that Eli Manning makes. He makes around the same money that Blake Bortles makes. He makes around the same money that Ryan Tannehill makes. Joe Flacco makes what starting quarterbacks make in the NFL. Like, this is where Chiefs fans, I think, are kind of, I won't say ignorant to it, but just right now in the NFL, either you pay your quarterback a lot of money or he's on that rookie deal. There's not really an in the middle right now in the NFL. Like, there's no good quarterback that makes $14 million or $13 million. you either got paid at some point in your career, like Alex Smith, Joe Flacco, we know the guys that have gotten paid, or you're like Mahomes, Goff, Wentz, guys that are on their rookie contract, or you're like on an old contract like Flacco or old contract like Russell Wilson or like Aaron Rodgers was, and you're about to get one more big bag, you're about to get one more check. So the money-wise to Joe Flacco, it's about what it should be, really. I mean, if you kind of look at the market.
Yeah, I guess the thing that hits me, though, is that, you know, Case Keenum is going to make a ton of money here, right? I mean, his dead cap this year is going to be $10 million. So they took on $18.5 million, and they still have Case Keenum.
Now, that's the issue.
That's the part that got my attention more than anything.
Let's see what happens with Case Keenum. If they get out of the Case Keenum contract in 2 weeks, no harm, no foul, I would say. If they still have that Case Keenum contract on the books, that's a bad deal.
I mean, his base salary for 2019 is supposed to be $18 million. That's what Case Keenum's base salary is supposed to be this year. That seems hard to move to me. I mean, is Case Keenum an $18 million quarterback?
I mean, somebody just traded a fourth-round pick for Joe Flacco's $20 million deal. You're telling me there's not one team out there that desperately needs a quarterback that won't trade a sixth-round pick for Case Keenum?
That just seems like a lot of money to me for that guy.
I mean,
I've never been on the Case Keenum bandwagon. I mean, this dude's had – I mean, how many teams has he played on? I mean, he's had a million – the Texans, the Rams, the Vikings, the Broncos. I mean, he's been all over the map.
I don't know about you guys. I saw a team last year trade for Alex Smith and then instantly give him money. That, man, we just see that there is a thirst for quarterbacks. If you think that quarterback has something, and I think we saw.
I just think Alex Smith's a lot better quarterback than Case Keenum.
I think that Alex Smith was an Andy Reid creation. Now looking at him, when I look at him.
Some good years in San Francisco too, man. Let's not forget about that.
When he had Harbaugh.
Exactly.
I look at the situation. I think we just see that unless you're going to have one of the top 10 quarterbacks in the NFL, it's largely based on situation. For as bad as Case Keenum was, he was Alex Smith when he was in a good situation. In Minnesota, whenever he had a good running game, he had a good defense. He had Thielen and Stephon Diggs. Case Keenum was more than capable enough to get you to the NFC Championship game. It's just all based on situation to me.
Yeah, it surprised me that they got Flacco and they're adding that salary. So if they're planning on keeping both of those guys and then there's no way they keep both of those guys.
No,
right?
Chance.
We agree on that.
No chance. Yeah. I want to play for you guys what Dayton Moore had to say about Kyle Zimmer.
When we draft a player or sign a player, and we're starting to decide between one player to the next, I mean, one of the things that we ask ourselves is if this player perhaps has a setback, an injury, or some circumstance that he has to fight through, can he persevere through it? And so we asked that question about Kyle before we even drafted him, and our people felt that he could, and so far he has.
You want to know how I know it's baseball season?
How?
You're starting to believe in one of the Royals' reclamation projects. We haven't even started playing games yet, and admit it a little bit. You're starting to buy into Kyle Zimmer.
Well, I'm buying into it a little bit because I know what's happened to some pitchers that go up to that Driveline Baseball Academy. That's part of it. That's part of it. I feel like, and I think the other part of it too, C-Dot, is that my expectations for Kyle Zimmer as a frontline starter, they're gone. You know, Kyle Zimmer to me, I think Kyle Zimmer is going to be a nice bullpen guy, a guy that, you know, that the Royals got back. They got him cheap. They put him out there. He wanted to be a Royal, came back. And I think that's where it stands. And I also think, and Kyle Zimmer talked today too, and I'm going to play that audio for you. He's going to be a guy, at least in my opinion, that I think is going to be easy for Royals fans to root for. And the conversation with Kyle Zimmer started today with, you know, what have you learned about yourself during this really, really tough time of your career?
That I have more patience than I thought I did. So I thought I was pretty impatient, but sort of looking back and over the past just six years or so, it's like, man, how have I come out on the other end of that? Because there are some dark times where it's just like when you're out here by yourself in the middle of summer and watching all your buddies playing on TV, and it's like, man, am I ever going to catch a break? Like, why am I still doing this? Like, and somehow just stuck with it, and looking forward just to the opportunity to make a team.
Did you ever get close to walking away?
Yeah. I mean, not really, but yeah.
Like in your mind?
Yeah, in my mind, it's like, man, I'm done. Screw this. And then the next day I wake up, it's like, all right, no, like, let's go. What do I got to do? But it's just more so moments of frustration, the past. Just I think it's more my stubbornness than anything else, because I've never lost confidence in myself and never lost belief that I can do it. And so just you go through moments and days where it's like, man, I'm so over this. But just in the end, you just keep grinding. It was weird I've never gone through free agency, and so it's all of a sudden the free agency hits and you're getting phone calls from other teams. It's like, what? Like, I never thought of myself as anything other than a Royal. And so in the end, I didn't really have any interest in going anywhere else other than the Royals. But when your phone's ringing and you just answer, and somebody's on the other line offering you something, and it's like you hear it. But I was the entire time my agent Mark Pieper and I were, our whole goal was to get back with the Royals, and so it was just a matter of figuring out how to do that and the best way to go about that, and, without cheating myself, sort obviously, and without cheating the team out of different opportunities. And so I obviously had a pretty significant loyalty to the Royals for everything they've stuck through with me. And Dayton and JJ, I mean, they've done everything that they could do to help me over the years. And so there's nowhere I want to pitch other than Kauffman, and I'm just really excited to be back.
As you approach it now, how much does it help you or encourage you to picture the end of the rainbow, or how much do you try not to even think about that?
I literally don't think about it at all. I try to just bury my head in the sand as far as that kind of stuff. I don't like reading any articles written about me. I don't like anything like that. I just try to, I'm literally, I mean, the cliche as it goes, and I say it all the time, but literally take it just one day at a time. Like, wake up, what do I gotta do today? I'm gonna do it. I'm gonna go home, I'm gonna forget about it, and go to tomorrow and start over.
I think it tells you about pitching in the big leagues too, if you didn't already know it. I mean, his phone was ringing from other major league teams wanting to give the guy a crack. I think a couple of things when it comes to Kyle Zimmer. I think Royals fans would be probably more frustrated, more irritated with him if they were depending heavily on him to be a frontline starter this year. And it was a time when the Royals absolutely needed it. Now, you can make that argument a couple of years ago. They really could have used him. But now, I mean, he's been through stuff. And I think all of us can relate in times where we've been through things. And Kyle Zimmer, at least right now, it appears has sort of come through there and gotten to the light at the end of the tunnel, as Vahe was talking about right there. And I'm going to give the guy a chance, you know. I'm going to give the guy a chance. If he can become a bullpen guy and they can get a handful of innings out of him, out of the pen, and his fastball was back up to 94 when he first went up to that academy, his arm was hanging off the side of him. He could barely throw. I think his velocity was 58 miles an hour. By the time he left there, it's 94, and he was pitching pain-free. I mean, my expectations aren't huge, you know, for Kyle Zimmer, but I think he's a really, really good story. And the fact that he wanted to come back to Kansas City and had other options, I think, is one of those things that'll endear him to Royals fans.
I think everybody is pulling for him. I think there's a little bit of a difference, and I thought you said it well at the end of, I'm all for giving Kyle Zimmer a chance. It is a minor league deal, so it's a low risk,
he's on the 40
high
man,
reward
though.
Kind of deal. If it doesn't work, the Royals will be perfectly fine with the Kyle Zimmer. They are not counting on Kyle Zimmer this season. I'm just not counting on him. I'm more looking at it from the fan perspective of, we've been talking about Kyle Zimmer, I feel like, for 6 years.
Yeah, a long time.
And have gotten absolutely nothing to show for believing in Kyle Zimmer, thinking he was going to do something. I said it yesterday. There's two people I'm not entertaining conversations about anymore: Bubba Starling and Kyle Zimmer. Whenever Kyle Zimmer's up here and he's pitching well, I'll be the first to tell you I'm wrong about it. Whenever Bubba Starling's batting leadoff for the Royals, I'll be the first to tell you I'm wrong. But the smart money on those two have always been to bet that they're not going to do it and that something's going to go wrong, because as long as we've known about him, as long as they've been in the Royals organization, something's only going wrong.
Well, I think with the Bubba Starling thing, I don't think you're going to see him up here. I mean, if that was the case, they don't go out and they get Billy. They don't trade for Brett Phillips, and they don't go out and they sign Billy Hamilton. Bubba Starling's not going to get up here because he can't hit, and he didn't put in the work in the offseason. With Kyle Zimmer, I think this guy put in the work, man, so I'm going to give him a shot.
Coming up, we need two callers, 913-576-7610. We're playing a game. There's more history than recent history. Who are you riding with in this game? Are you riding with Bob Fesco from Fesco in the Morning or Brad Fanning? We'll do that next. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Back in on The Drive, coming up in about 10 minutes or so, Kansas State should be a sign of encouragement to other teams around the country. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. And yesterday was an incredible night of college basketball. If you weren't watching it, Duke versus Louisville was very entertaining, as Louisville was up 23 with less than 10 minutes to go and lost. Very Missouri of them. I saw a pretty funny quote from a Missouri beat writer. Somebody told Konzo Martin after the game what happened to Louisville, and he said, "Welcome to the club." And then LSU-Kentucky was a very controversial ending, with LSU clearly committing basket interference at the end of that game. We'll talk about that. Plus, we've got another edition of Kansas City's favorite television radio show. We'll talk about that coming up in just a little bit. But we're going to play this game until baseball season starts. It is called There's More History Than Recent History, because Fanning always says that. Fanning will talk about something that happened in 1950 and be like, you young kids don't know that life just didn't start on Facebook and Instagram. There's more history than more recent history. So last week we had Josh Vernier in. Now we welcome in Bob Fesco from Fesco in the Morning. How you doing today, man?
I am good. Thanks for having me in. You mentioned that college basketball, and I said this morning, I said I'm probably going to get eggs thrown at me by every other Kansas fan, but K-State's more entertaining to watch than Kansas right now.
Because they're just better than they are. But
that's what college basketball is for me. That's why I've checked out of college basketball this year, because I just don't like college basketball. But when you can have a senior group of players like K-State has that have been around, that's college basketball. That's a little piece of like old home week for me watching K-State play last
I'm not going to lie to you. Over the last 2 years, I've gotten more interested in college basketball because last year the whole Michael Porter thing,
yeah,
I was
that
pretty
gets
fired
you
up.
Yeah.
And then this year thinking that the streak's going to end, I'm not going to lie. This is locked into the Big 12 I've been since Missouri's been in the league. I'm fired
well,
up.
Well, last night
Big
was
12.
One of those games that normally a team loses and lets Kansas right back into the
I
Big
agree,
12
totally.
Race. And
yeah.
And last night Texas, you know, couldn't come back or hold on to their lead, I should say. And K-State found a way to win that game. Those are the type of games that in the past Kansas would have to their advantage. The team in front of them would lose that game. Kansas would win one, and Kansas would be off and running for a Big 12 championship.
This is so. Fired up to talk about Kansas State basketball as I've ever been in my entire life. Every day I want to leave with K-State. Every day I want to remind people that K is about to lose the league.
Well, K-State is what's right with college basketball.
I like hearing you say that. All right. So the game is there's more history than recent history. It's very simple. Uh-huh. I found something on Twitter where somebody put up every Final Jeopardy baseball question they've ever asked on the television show. Yeah. You go up against Brad Fanning in a contest. We go to the phone line and we ask them, all right, Dave, who do you want to have on your team to represent you? Do you want Fanning or Fesco?
Gotta go with Fanning.
You're all my right. dude, Dave.
All right.
You're my guy.
It is very simple. Bob, your name is your buzzer.
Okay.
So I will ask you questions. First one to get three questions right, they are the winner in There's More History Than Recent History. Kicking things off. Pro sports. The official address of the Atlanta Braves is 755. On the drive, name for this man.
Bob. Fanning.
Bob got you.
Henry Aaron.
Oh, that's so easy,
Hank Aaron is the correct
answer. When I heard 755, I should have just said my name. I should have
Suck it, Fanning.
I know.
All right. Alliterative athletes. In 1998, these two baseball rivals share top honors as Sports Illustrated Sportsman of the Year.
In 1998,
these two baseball rivals share top honors as Sports Illustrated's Sportsman
Bob.
Of the Year. Bob.
I am going to go with Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa.
That is correct.
Wow. Hutchins! My bad, Dave.
Moving on down the list.
That's a good call, Bob, because you had the...
It was 98. It was the greatest year of baseball ever.
It was the home run thing. It's tainted.
No, it's not tainted.
Yeah, it is.
All right.
Did you see it happen?
I did see it.
It happened.
Baseball history. On August 10th, 2003, Rafael Furcal of the Braves became only the 12th man in Major League Baseball history to perform this act single-handedly.
Bob.
I know what this is.
Played every position.
Incorrect.
Unassisted triple play?
Triple play is the correct answer. Fanning gets on the board. Fesco 2, Fanning 1 to stay in the game. Toys and games. 12-year-old David Mullaney, I believe that's how you pronounce his last name, gave this toy its name, a euphemism for striking out in baseball. A 12-year-old kid gave this toy its name, a euphemism for striking out in baseball.
Fanning? K-Zone? I don't know.
Incorrect.
That's what I was going to go with.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't think I know the answer for it.
Yeah.
What? I don't know what to say to you right now.
Wiffle ball is the answer.
Oh, I didn't know that. Wiffle ball. That was for striking out, huh?
Yes.
What year was whiffing, that? Yeah. What year did he give that name?
It just said he was 12 years old.
Got it. Okay.
Yeah. Wiffle ball.
I wouldn't have got that.
Was the name. In the bookstore, editor Otto Penzler dubbed his 2001 lineup of baseball mysteries after this nickname given to a famous 1927 lineup. Editor Otto Penzler.
Murderer's Row.
Row is the correct answer.
This is the 29
answer.
Yankees. I was
27.
27 Yankees, my bad.
Shout out, Brandon.
But weren't you alive in 27?
No, I was not, Bob.
He was a junior.
Yeah, junior in high school. You and Kling were hanging out back then, right?
Yeah, we were. How old's Kling, anyway?
47, I think.
So Kling and I are about the same age.
Yeah. Right,
what are you, Bob? You're in your 40s.
I'm 42 in April, yeah.
Wow.
And that concludes today's game.
My bad, Dave.
Does Dave still win a prize?
Kurt wins.
Yeah. Dave don't get nothing. He lost.
Yeah,
Dave.
Oh, I didn't realize there was another caller on there. Yeah, Kurt won. Congratulations, Kurt.
Yeah, so you got two callers. You got Dave and Kurt.
Yeah, Kurt. Kurt took because Kurt's on your side.
Yeah, he didn't get to say my name, though.
Brandon's a really good producer. He never tells us what prize we have to give him. It's kind of hard to like tease what prizes we have. Last time for pick a player, he was like, we got $25. I don't know where, but we'll figure it
cash.
Out.
Cash. It's cash.
We got $25 to Twin Peaks.
$25 to Twin Peaks.
That's a nice gift. I like that place.
I think that last question was in Fesco's favor. I mean, he's a Yankee fan. He grew up in New York.
Murderers Row is like the only famous lineup there, or the knothole gang. Yeah. What's it going to be?
You just tell me there's more history than recent history. You don't know about Murderers Row, the 1927. Yankees.
Like you could see that this is fixed or something like that, but you're supposed to be this baseball dork who should know these things before the question's even answered.
I should have. Maybe I'll get
very disappointing. Very disappointing.
Let me ask you this.
Rig it like that movie Game Show.
Fanning, let me ask you this before we
did
let
Vern
Bob
beat
out
you
here.
Last time?
He yes, got me, yeah, Vern but he just he beat me to the buzzer a couple of times. The last
well,
question
the
was,
elderly's a little slow. You got tennis balls on your walker over there, Brad.
The last question last week was like, what's the biggest state in the union that doesn't have a Major League Baseball team?
Oh, hang on a second. Like size-wise or population?
Size-wise.
Alaska.
No, well.
Montana.
It was Montana.
Well, Alaska doesn't have a team.
Yeah,
it's the biggest state.
It must have been in like the continent on the lower, the I can lower
actually,
49.
I can actually find it really quickly for you. Let me ask you this. Who do you want to go up against next week? So it actually was after Alaska. It is the largest state in area without a Major League Baseball team. Yeah. Montana was the correct answer. Yeah. Who do you want to go? So you've lost to Vern.
Yeah, I lost to Fesco. I need a dub, so let's go against Binkley.
All right, Binkley next week. Next week in this game, the exact same time, we will play. There's more history than recent history. Bob, thanks a lot for coming back up here, man.
You got it, guys.
Thanks, Bob.
Dayton Moore tomorrow at 8:30.
You got Dayton Moore. Tomorrow at 8:30. That a boy.
Can you ask him about Ian Kennedy of – is this the worst contract he's ever given out?
Oh, my. Yeah, I think the answer is definitely yes on that.
What do you think he would say to that, Bob?
I mean, he'd probably hang up the phone.
You think he would?
Yeah.
I just, because we talked about this earlier today, is the number one thing they told us when they signed Ian Kennedy is he can eat innings.
Yeah.
You're not eating innings coming out of the bullpen.
No, innings haven't been ate. But you know what? I like the fact that they're doing it because it says, you know what? We're not worried about the contract. We're putting the best five guys out there. And even if this guy's making $20 million or whatever it is, we don't care. We're not sacrificing wins and losses because he's making money.
They owe him $33 million. He can't be pitching in the sixth inning.
Dude, it's the contract that never ends. Like, every time you look at Ian Kennedy's contract, he's got two more years left on it.
My theory on this, Bob, is this. I think what they're trying to do is they're trying to turn him into a reliever, make him healthy, try to flip him at the deadline and pay 60-70% of the deal and get out of it.
I mean, I'd pay all of it to get out of it right now.
That's what Carrington said. There's no way that the Royals are paying $32 million.
It's still 2 years left on that contract.
I don't think you can eat the whole thing, but just, I mean, at this point, the Ian Kennedy contract, it's a dub at this point. You lost.
The biggest win of Ian Kennedy's career was not opting out when he had the opportunity to opt out.
I remember, I think it was Rustin asked him. He was like, why would I do that? Yeah, I don't know why you would opt out of that contract.
Yes.
Bob, thanks a lot for coming on, man. We appreciate it. Coming up, K-State should be a sign of encouragement for basketball teams around the country. Plus, last night was a great night in college basketball. We'll talk about it coming up. It's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
Coming up at 4 o'clock. We have a brand new edition of Kansas City's favorite game. It is called the Carrington Random Hypothetical Button Game.
Oh, it's random now. I thought it was just the Carrington's Hypothetical Button Game.
This is a spinoff.
Okay.
It's actually a really good question. I think you guys will enjoy it. I actually got two of them today. I got a double dip for you guys.
Mm, it's like a double feature.
It's going to be a really good one. And we'll give you another chance to win $400 to Santa Fe Audio. We'll do that coming up at 5 o'clock. So, I was thinking this yesterday and I've been guilty of this too, because I'm not going to tell you guys how many times I've suggested for Missouri to fire Barry Odom, at least three, that Kansas State basketball should serve as a sign of encouragement to the rest of us to be patient with your team. You guys remember, it wasn't a year ago, many of you hated Bruce Weber, and I ain't really going to fault you for hating Bruce Weber. I was right there behind you. But you know what happens? You get hot in the NCAA tournament. The bracket breaks your way. You get to the Elite Eight. You then can ride that wave of emotion. You ride that confidence. You now have put a team together that is the favorite to win the Big 12. And certainly we agree it would be a disappointment now. And I would say a tremendous disappointment to K-State, its players, and its fans if K-State does not win the Big 12. Man, things can change rather quickly. That today, if Gene Taylor came on and said that they decided to give Bruce Weber a five-year extension. Mm-hmm. I would say it was a well-deserved five-year extension. He has done everything that you have asked him to do. When you first got him, he tied for KU with the Big 12. Now it's a little bit of an asterisk by you did not beat KU this year, but you still kept the ship rolling a little bit. You've now put together a team that can win the Big 12 outright, a team that can go deep in the NCAA tournament last year, and let's see what happens this year. Certainly a team that if you're in the right seed, if, again, matchups break your way, this K-State team can absolutely make the Final Four. It should show you to be patient that sometimes I think as a fan base, we rush to fire coaches when they don't meet a certain level of expectation. Kansas State was rewarded for its patience. And I'll go even further. There was a time where you agree, if you ask K-State fans, who would you rather have, Brad Underwood or Bruce Weber?
Yeah.
It was probably 97% to 3 you'd rather have Brad Underwood as your coach. And I remember crushing K-State that they wouldn't just go get Brad Underwood. Who would you rather have right now? Would you rather have Brad Underwood be your coach or Bruce Weber be your coach? Because I'm guessing if you're a K-State fan, you're really happy with having Bruce Weber as your coach. I remember thinking that Missouri should have hired Brad Underwood. I remember thinking that Brad Underwood was a better coach than Konzo Martin. There's no chance I would trade Konzo Martin for Brad Underwood. So sometimes being patient and giving your coach 5-6 years to kind of get his recruits in, get everybody acclimated to the system, get everybody buying into the program, and then to allow your recruits to be juniors and seniors the way they have at Kansas State, it has paid big dividends for that program.
I think we've already seen it in Kansas City, man. And we saw it with the Royals, with Ned Yost. Haven't we? I mean, the Royals stayed patient with Ned Yost. Ned Yost said, let's preach patience with some of these young players. Guys like Alcides Escobar, he continued to pinch hit him. Stay patient with Moose. Stay patient with Haas. Stay patient with those guys. And now you're right. We are seeing it with Bruce Weber, because the biggest knock on Bruce Weber was it was pretty simple. He couldn't win with his own guys, because he went to, what, the national title game in Illinois after Bill Self left there. And then he came to K-State, got a share of the Big 12 title with the majority of those guys were Frank Martin's dudes. And now we're seeing everything come full circle with Bruce Weber. I love what K-State's doing. As a KU fan, I love what K-State's doing. And it excites me to be able to see players like Barry Brown and Dean Wade, Kamau Snoke, Xavier Sneed, all those guys, develop and be able to. I mean, it's kind of like back college basketball was when I really, really fell in love with it in the 90s. Because you got to know who the players are. You got to see these guys develop and grow up. We don't really get to see that at Kansas, with exception of the guys like, you know, Devontae Graham or Frank Mason, or unless they go and run a crazy run and win a national championship, or if Brandon Rush sticks around. I love what K-State's doing. And that's exactly the kind of coach that they need at K-State, because they're not getting one and dones. They're getting the other guys. You know, they're getting dudes that they've got some ability, they've got some talent, but the big schools aren't going after them. I mean, I went back and I looked at some of the schools that were going after Barry Brown and Dean Wade and guys like that. Not a laundry list of big-time schools that were coming after these dudes. So, yeah, I'm with you. If you can preach patience and stay with a guy like K-State has with Bruce Weber, you're in great shape. And that's exactly what K-State needs. Because I'm sorry, man, you're not getting a high-level Calipari-type guy to ever go to Kansas State. It's not happening. Now, maybe you get Cousins for Huggins for a bridge year. But that's not the way it's going to work. K-State, in my opinion, has its perfect coach right now.
BK, you want to know who Bruce Weber reminds me of? This is a lot like how Missouri football got good with Gary Pinkel. If you think about how Missouri football was for the first 7 years, they were a 500 program, and then they got Chase Daniel.
Mm-hmm.
And then they went on an incredible 8-year run where they won Big 12 North championships. They went to the Cotton Bowl. Gary Pinkel turned things around. It feels very similar that if we look at the first early part, I would say, of what's happened with Bruce Weber, and mm-hmm. now you look at this part, now the challenge is going to be, once you lose Dean Wade, once you lose Barry Brown, can you replicate that success with the next crop? I've always believed this. If you're not going to be Duke, if you're not going to be Kansas, if you're not going to be Kentucky, your hope is that every 3-4 seasons, you have put together a crop of juniors and seniors that you think are capable of taking a run. That's exactly what's happened here. That's what happened at Missouri. That it didn't happen with Mike Anderson. But you bring in Frank Haith, you had Kim English, you had Marcus Denman, you had mm-hmm. Michael Dixon, you had all those guys that were seniors, you made a run. Now, you didn't make a run in the NCAA tournament, but you guys understand the point.
Yeah.
That now for K-State, you have your juniors, you have your seniors, and this is the class that you think you can make a run with. And then you'll go on a cycle, you'll go on a little bit of a downturn, but then you hope in a couple years, as those guys mature, as that next crop matures, you hope that you're in a position to do this again in a couple years.
I want to throw this at you, and you know, Marcus Foster transferred at K-State. I think if Marcus Foster would have stuck around at K-State, I think they would have got here quicker. I mean, because Marcus, he played his last year at Creighton last year, and K-State beat him in the NCAA tournament. I think Bruce Weber was already on that path, but he couldn't hang on to a guy like Marcus Foster. I actually kind of wondered if that was the thing that was going to sink him, to be honest with you, when Foster transferred to Creighton. But I think he was already starting to do that. He just lost a guy, and that's what's going to happen in college basketball from time to time. I mean, really, I mean, can you imagine if Marcus Foster was on – well, I guess he probably wouldn't have been around because he had to sit out a year. But, I mean, if Marcus Foster was still – he was the bridge to get you to this group, what K-State could have been? I mean, Marcus Foster was a great player. If you guys remember him as a freshman, he was phenomenal. You know, that's when I'm like, okay, all right, now we're talking here with Bruce Weber. You're getting Frank Martin's guys out of there, and you bring in a dude like Marcus Foster who lights it up as a freshman. Man, maybe they got something here, and he couldn't hang on to him. And so I think Foster, if he would have stayed here, K-State would be even better right now.
I want to play this for you. This is what Zion Williamson had to say after the game. If you saw it last night, Duke had an impressive comeback. I would say like a once-in-a-five-year, 10-year kind of comeback. Duke was down 23 points to Louisville on the road with less than 10 minutes to go, and Duke won the game in regulation. I know in Kansas City how much you guys love win probability. Duke had a 0.01 probability of winning that basketball game yesterday, and they came back and won. A remarkable win for Duke yesterday. Here's what Zion Williamson said when he was interviewed after the game.
What were some of the things that Coach K was talking to you about in the huddles to keep you believing?
He said he don't coach losers. He want to coach winners. He said go out there, play hard. He can coach us to a win.
That's all you got to do? You're telling me that Kim Anderson could have looked in the eyes of Mitchell Smith and just simply said, who? I don't coach losers. I coach winners.
Mitchell Smith?
He still plays for Missouri.
Oh, he does? Okay.
That's all you had to do?
Uh-huh.
And Missouri could have been good? So you're telling me Tony Muser, all he had to do was look in the eyes of some of Emile Brown and simply say?
What were some of the things that Coach K was talking to you about in the huddles to keep you believing?
He said he don't coach losers.
That's all you had to do? You're telling me all it takes is
if Romeo would have said that.
You're telling me all he had to do, all Todd Haley had to do was look at Matt Castle and say, I don't coach losers.
Yeah.
And they would have instantly been able to do incredible things. How has this not been the key to unlock success for so long?
That's a great question. I think Kim Anderson probably said that at Central Missouri State and it worked, but at Mizzou, I don't think it would have worked either.
I mean, maybe he's saying that right now at Pitt State. I don't think he ever said that at Missouri. I don't think one time he ever looked at Kevin Purrier and said, I don't coach losers to turn things around, because he certainly should have said that in their first game against UMKC. If he says that to Kevin Purrier.
Yeah.
Whole story is different. Kim Anderson and that still Missouri right team now. Goes on a run.
He's still here right
he
now.
He is.
He's still coaching Mizzou. He should have said it right out of the gate. I mean, like his first, you know, the first time he met his squad, man. I don't coach losers. And then there's no telling where Mizzou would be.
That was a good message. Do you think Turner Gill told this to his football program?
I don't think he did. I think he maybe should have.
I don't think this message has been told to a KU football team in 10 years. I don't think at one point has somebody looked at a KU football team and said, I don't coach losers.
What were some of the things that Coach K was talking to you about in the huddles to keep you believing?
He said he don't coach losers. He want to coach winners. He said go out there, play hard. He can coach us to a win.
Can I ask you a question?
I mean, somebody should have told Montel.
Les Miles might try that. Miles would be able to say it.
Les Miles don't coach losers. No, you're right. Les Miles don't coach losers. That's a good one.
Was there a guy like the same level as Zion Williamson on any of Mizzou's Kim Anderson teams? Because I'm thinking that might be kind of that might be the difference here. You know,
I don't know if you've seen Reed Nico play, but absolutely. I don't know how
Willie
much
Jackson,
Reed Nico.
Remember him?
Yeah, I don't know if you watched
KJ Walton.
I don't know if you watched Techie Gil Caesar. I don't know if you watched him or not, but they definitely had some Zion.
He was like a top 20 recruit. He was actually legitimately supposed to be good.
He was a hooper.
And then he fell on his back.
You're telling me that Kim Anderson, all he has to do was say this to Jonathan Williams III, and they would have started winning? Maybe he would have stayed at Mizzou. Coming up, we're going to need your phone calls here in a little bit. I have brought back Kansas City's favorite game, Carrington's hypothetical button game. We'll play that next. Coming up, it's The Drive.
The Drive, presented by Tecate.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.